Swagyanatimiran dasya jana jana salakaya saksusumilatan jena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri chaitanya manubhistam stapitam jena bhutale sayam upakadamayam dadati sa pandantikam. Dhruva Maharaj is spoken of in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. And Dhruva Maharaj is very exemplary, And there are, of course, many lessons we wish to learn from Dhruva Maharaj, and we'll focus on one of those lessons, and that will be basically the last, what we will close on. Now, the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj did not start off in a positive way, because Dhruva Maharaj was the son of King Uttanapad, which of course was positive, because Uttanapad and Priyavrata were the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu. And Uttanapad was the ruler. Priyavrata decided that he did not wish to rule, even though he was the oldest son. He decided he didn't want to take part in any management or any politics. He became a renunciant. Later on, he had to renounce his renunciation. But now, and that will be spoken of in the first chapter of the fifth canto, but now, Dhruva Maharaj, one of the two sons of Uttanapad, son of Suniti was his mother's name, and he and the king Uttanapad had another wife whose name was Suruchi. Suruchi was much younger than Suniti, and therefore, as it turned out, Suruchi was much more favored by Uttanapad. The younger queen was so much more favored by Uttanapad than Suniti, Dhruva's mother. And therefore, circumstantially, Suruchi's son, whose name was Uttam, was more favored by the king, because practically speaking, it was demanded by Suruchi. So one day, while Uttam was on the lap of his father, the king, Uttanapad, while his father sat on the throne, naturally, what did Dhruva want to do? Naturally, he wanted to get on his father's lap as well. He was a young boy, 5 years old, and as he was climbing upon the throne, his stepmother, Suruchi, began to speak to him very harshly. "My dear child, you don't deserve to sit on the throne." And this was right in front of the king as well. The king could hear this. "You do not deserve to sit on the throne, nor do you deserve to sit on the lap of the king." What is his disqualification? "Surely," she said, "you are the king's son, but yet you have a disqualification, and that is, you did not take birth from my womb." In other words, being the king's son is not a sufficient qualification to attain the king's lap or the throne. "You have to take birth from my womb." So there was some arrogance there, because she was favored by the king. "You should understand," she said, "that your attempt," because it's somewhat symbolic in one sense, he was trying to climb to the throne. "Your attempt," she said, "is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. But don't give up hope. If you at all desire to rise to the king's throne, then this is what you should do." you perform severe austerities. Then, you should satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Severe austerities are not sufficient. Then you must satisfy the Lord, and that's true. Because without Krishna's desire, nothing can happen. And then, when you satisfy Lord Narayan, and when you achieve His favor, His mercy, then, due to your worship and austerity in satisfying the Lord, then you can take your next birth from my womb. So Dhruva was a Kshatriya, a warrior. And he took that instruction of his stepmother, even though he was just a young boy, he took that as a great slap in the face. Perform austerities, you're not good enough. Please the Lord. You're not good enough as you are. And then, if He favors you, you'll take your birth from my womb. And then, when you are my son, then maybe you can rise and become the king. So Dhruva Maharaj began to breathe very heavily in anger. Again, he was a warrior, Kshatriya. He looked to his father, Uttanapad, and Uttanapad didn't say anything in protest. So he stormed out of the palace, running, crying, breathing heavily. He went to his mother, Suniti, she saw him so disturbed, she didn't understand what had happened. She lifted him to her lap. And the residents of the palace who had overheard what had happened, they told her everything. And imagine how Suniti felt. The mother feels great pain at the pain of her son. And what was the boy's pain caused by? The fact that she was his mother. So she became like a burnt leaf. What's left after a leaf is burnt? Practically there's nothing left. So she practically dissipated in her anguish at her son's position. So she also began to breathe heavily, and she didn't know actually what to do about it. Because although it was harsh and strong, she had spoken the truth. Saruchi had spoken the truth. But she began to speak to Dhruva, and she said, "My dear son," and this is a very important instruction for us all, "don't wish ill for others. Don't wish inauspiciousness for others. Because anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain." My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Saruchi is true. Because the king, your father, this was must have been so painful for her to admit, your father does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He neglects me. He feels ashamed to accept me. She was older. Therefore it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and by being fed by her breast, you have grown up. But yet, my dear Dhruva, whatever has been spoken by Saruchi, your stepmother, although harsh to hear, is factual, it is true. So if you desire to sit on the same throne as Uttama, your stepbrother, you have to give up your envious attitude and immediately follow the instructions that Saruchi has given. Without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear boy, You also, you should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is very kind to His devotees. Because how should I take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart, and without deviating for one moment, engage always in His service. So, out of misfortune, out of a broken heart, will come something wonderful. Suniti found truth in what Suruchi had said, and she told the boy to go to the forest and worship the Supreme Lord. Listen to how Prabhupada explains the words of Suniti within his purport to the 22nd verse of this chapter of the fourth canto. This is how Prabhupada paraphrases what just has happened. Suniti said, very touching, "You have come to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother, but I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to His devotees that if you go to Him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by His affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help the devotee. In difficult times, we turn to this. And by these instructions, we turn to Krishna." Prabhupada continues, "Queen Suniti also stressed that the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated by her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of Karma Kanda. But by the process of Bhakti Yoga, even a child less than 5 years old or anyone of any age can be purified. That is the special significance of Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, she advised him not to accept the worship of the demigods or any other process, but simply take to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the result would be all perfection. As soon as one places the Supreme Personality of Godhead within one's heart, everything becomes easy and successful." So, Dhruva Maharaj, his mother had told him, his heart had been broken, he became determined, and although he was just a child, a young child, he headed for the forest, because when one wants to find the Lord, or when the sages want to find the Lord, they go to the forest. So Dhruva headed for the forest. And when he was there, what would he do when he was there? But he went with that sincerity of determination. But what was his motive? He was angry. He was upset. And as we'll hear later, he wanted a kingdom. But he went to the forest, really didn't have a clear direction of what he was doing. He went to the forest, but he went searching for Krishna. And in the forest, while he was in the forest, a great sage decided to show him some mercy. And what was that great sage's name? Narada Muni. Narada, Narada. Da means giver, Nara means to man. So Narada gives mankind, the greatest of all things, because he gives Krishna consciousness, Bhakti Yoga. So when Narada saw this young boy wandering in the forest, he thought, How wonderful is the spirit of powerful kshatriyas. He could have said, this child is so foolish, he's so stupid. Look what he's doing, he's going to the forest, so dangerous. What does he know? He doesn't know anything. What is he after? He's insulted. What is the value of this? He could have thought like this. But he saw something very, very wonderful within the heart of this boy. And that wonderful thing was born of the kshatriya nature. And that wonderful thing was determination. But this determination was born of pride. And yet he saw that determination. And he used that as a spark to ignite his Krishna consciousness. So he said, how wonderful are the powerful kshatriyas. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. So would we consider this from the devotional point of view wonderful? No, but Narada saw within this a wonderful seed. Just imagine, Narada said, this boy is only a small child, yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. So he approached Dhruva, and he wanted to test to see how deep his determination was. So he said, you are just a boy. Someone insulted you. If someone insults you, someone compliments you, what is a boy? 2 seconds later, he sees something that he likes crawling down the road, he completely forgets everything. So, you're a boy, why are you taking this seriously? Anyway, this is Maya working, it's your pride. A Maya gives pleasure, it gives misery, it's the illusory energy. You want to practice austerities in mystic yoga? These are very difficult. You won't be able to satisfy the Lord by practicing that because you're so young. So, not that you shouldn't do this, but for the time being you should go home. Go home, make up with your family, and then later when you're older, if you want to find God, practice austerities, practice mystic yoga, then you can do it. So, if Dhruva Maharaj wasn't so determined, this story would be very short. And in one sense, it would have a happy ending. Dhruva Maharaj then said, you're right, Narada. Narada, you are giving this boy, this man, good advice. Because first of all, it's getting cold. And second of all, I'm getting hungry. And third of all, there might be tigers and lions out here. And I miss my mommy, my mata. But he wasn't like that at all. Narada gave him good Krishna conscious instructions. He said, one should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition of life, whether distress or happiness. This is what we were preaching before. One should accept that, everything that happens, good and bad, distress and happiness. Accept everything and be satisfied with it. Accept everything which is offered by the Supreme Will. A person who endures in this way is able to cross over the darkness of nescience very easily. Good preaching. But Dhruva Maharaj replied by saying, my dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace and mind is certainly very good instruction. But, as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance. So that question was asked, what happens when the mind becomes out of equilibrium? Dhruva's mind was out of equilibrium.
Agitation.
Yes, he was agitated, he was angry, he was disturbed. His pride had been wounded. So he said, your instructions are very good, but for me, as far as I am concerned, I'm covered by ignorance. And this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. My dear Lord,
Narada. I am very impudent for not accepting your instructions. But this is not my fault. It is due to my having been born in a Kshatriya family. My stepmother Saruchi has pierced my heart with her harsh words. Therefore, your valuable instruction does not stand in my heart. Now, Prabhupada's purport here is quite long, but I'm just going to read a small part of it. Because there's something that we should remember when we talk to each other. It is said, Prabhupada's purport, that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narada Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable but his desire to counteract her insult. And when, if we come from the West and we think of a broken pot, we think of our big, thick stainless steel pots. But think of an Indian pot, an earthen pot. Try to put that back together again once it's broken. So the heart is like that. So Dhruva said, my heart is like that. I cannot return home. And then he expressed his desire to Narada. 5-year-old boy, O learned Brahmana, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone. Because his stepmother had challenged him, you shall not be able to sit on the throne. You shall not be able to be king. So now, he wanted a kingdom, but not his father's kingdom. He wanted a kingdom greater than his father's kingdom. He wanted a kingdom greater than anyone's kingdom. He's only 5 years old. I want a kingdom greater than any achieved within the three worlds, even by my fathers and grandfathers. Brahma was the king of, he was the ruler of the universe. He wanted a kingdom even greater than that. Greater than something that's not possible to be greater than. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. So Narada tested him, and the boy passed the test. He was very determined. His desire was outrageous. He wanted, Brahma was the ruler of everything, and he wanted a kingdom greater than everything. Impossible. But he approached Narada, please, if you can give me a path to do this, I shall attempt it with that determination. So is this a great, great exalted spiritual desire? No. But again, Narada saw something in this boy. Something very valuable, that spark that would later blaze in Krishna consciousness. So Narada actually began instructing him on how to practice Krishna consciousness. First thing, practically, go to Madhuvan. Go to Vrindavan. Vrindavan is marked with the footprints of Hari. Who is this Hari? I think it is Sridhar Swami, the great commentator on the Bhagavatam, that explains that he's specifically speaking about Krishna there. Because when Lord Narayan comes to this earth, his feet, like the feet of the demigods, never touch the ground. But when Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, comes to Madhuvan in this world, he kindly graces the earth with his lotus footprints. And all around Govardhan, all around Vrindavan, Lord Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna's lotus feet touch this ground and the earth. So go to Madhuvan, take shelter of the Jamuna. bathe in the Jamuna and become purified. You should sit down on an asan properly. You should practice mystic yoga. You should meditate upon the beautiful Lord in your heart. You should chant a mantra that I will now give you. And what mantra did he give him? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Everyone. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And you should worship the deity. No sense gratification, and you should be absorbed in this worship one way or another, 24 hours a day. Perform devotional service as Suniti, your mother, has instructed you, because this is exactly suitable for you, and you should absorb yourself fully in it. And after instructing Dhruva, Narada left. And Dhruva also left for Madhubala, Vrindavan. He left for the forest. Now, Dhruva Maharaj began to practice his devotional service according to Narada's instructions, fully determined to find the Lord who is the giver of all benedictions, who can mend everyone's heart. And with that full determination, he began to practice. And there is a description of his practices, and as we know, they are they're amazing, amazing. Dhruva ate infrequently, he stopped eating. He drank water infrequently, he stopped drinking. He breathed, his breathing even stopped as he became fixed in meditation on the Lord, and he brought the Lord within his heart. To such a degree that the universe became troubled. He choked up the breathing of the universe. And this was all within 6 months of practice, a young boy of 5 years old. The demigods went to complain to Lord Brahma that the universal breathing was choked up. And then finally, the Lord himself came. And Dhruva actually saw him. He saw that Lord. Now, when Dhruva saw the Lord, the desire that was in his mind prior to seeing the Lord and prior to his being purified was basically grossly materialistic, a kingdom. But when he saw the Lord, all his desires, his heart, were fully satisfied. And his thought was that previously what I was looking for was like broken glass, thinking that broken glass sparkling in the sunlight is very valuable, like jewels and sapphires and rubies and diamonds. But now seeing you and seeing what something truly valuable is, none of these other desires have any meaning. So he prayed to the Lord, Krishna Gaura, and those prayers are very wonderful. And he gained the ability to speak by the touch of the Lord's kanchal upon his head. His prayers are very wonderful. And the Lord then replied to those prayers and gave him all kinds of benedictions. He said, "My dear Dhruva, son of the king, you have executed pious vows to please me, and I also know the desire within your heart. Although your desire is very ambitious and very difficult to fulfill, impossible to fulfill, a kingdom bigger than everything, I shall favor you with its fulfillment. All good fortune unto you." So the Lord benedicted Dhruva Maharaj with the pole star, with being the ruler of the pole star, which is the north star, which all the planets revolve around.
And this planet is a Vaikuntha planet, which is not devastated at the end of the universe. So all the planets pay their obeisances to the pole star as they circumambulate it, and it's an eternal planet. No one had ever ruled it before, and that was given to Dhruva. And in addition, you shall rule this earth for 36,000 years. And your senses will remain strong during that time. You will not get older. Your body will not deteriorate. And you will remember me at the time of your death. And you will go to me. And your stepbrother Uttam will be killed by a yaksha. Just imagine how Dhruva felt at this point. Because he, and your stepmother Saruchi will search for this boy, her son, and die in a forest fire. So Dhruva, in his enmity, had harbored some bad feelings towards his stepbrother and stepmother. And now, they were going to die. That was the prediction. Imagine how Dhruva felt. I had this experience myself once. Not that there was, without mentioning any names, there was someone in a position in a temple that we had some altercation, some fight. Not physical fight, but we argued, and he was in the managerial position, and I was subordinate. And it hurt me. And I ended up leaving that place, that temple. And although the person was my friend, I could not relax my heart against him. And I wasn't wishing him ill consciously, but I was angry at him, and I wasn't being his well-wisher. And I maintained that for several years. I couldn't remove it. And then he himself had trouble in his Krishna consciousness, and he left the association of devotees. And then I felt horrible that I was maintaining enmity against him, and he had trouble. I felt horrible. My dear devotees, I request you to examine your hearts and don't allow these things to remain in your heart, because if these desires are ever fulfilled, or if it just happens circumstantially, you will feel horrible. And later, when I saw that devotee, then my heart was very, very soft and we became friends again. But I knew that that there was something really wrong there. Envy, enmity. So please, I request you all, please don't allow these things to sit in the heart. Also interesting to note about this, because it actually happens later. Prabhupada will explain in a purport that the reason why they died, both of them died, and this, when I thought in this way, I was shocked, was because they offended, especially Saruchi had offended a great devotee, Dhruva Maharaj, because Dhruva Maharaj had seen the Lord. But consider this point, that at the time when Saruchi offended Dhruva Maharaj and spoke so harshly to him, was he a great exalted pure devotee? No! He was a person desiring a kingdom. He was a most ambitious fellow. He was a devotee, undoubtedly, a descendant of Maharaj Uttanapad, but he was not yet a devotee, meaning an exalted devotee. And how we treat each other. What happens if someone like insult or in some way or another, or push out of the way, or hurt, or do something, or speak hard? What happens if later on he becomes an exalted pure devotee? So we should be very, 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 very careful. This is the one danger of association with devotees.
is because it's so easy. Familiarity tends to breed contempt. And it's so easy to take devotees for granted. But let us be warned by this. And therefore, because of this, very, very early in the movement, Srila Prabhupada instituted the practice that each morning, first thing, not first thing, but during the morning program, at least once, all the devotees offer their obeisances to each other. This is the meaning. Please forgive me for all the offenses I may have knowingly or unknowingly committed to you. I've hurt you, I've done something, I've said something, I said someone to someone who told someone who told someone, and then it finally got back to you, and it hurt you. Please forgive me. In the early days, I don't know how it was, in the early days, the first thing when the devotees woke up in the morning, whenever they would see a devotee for the first time, no matter where they were practically, they would offer obeisances. Yes, Sam?
Yes, even in the bathroom.
Even in the bathroom. Vajrabihari, you too? Now it's very formalized. And then embracing, offering obeisances. So, that was predicted by the Lord. All wonderful occurrences for Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj became the king. Now, we won't go into much of the story in details, and there's another several chapters of describing Dhruva Maharaj as a king, and how he went to, when Uttama actually was killed, he went to avenge the death of his brother, and he started killing thousands and thousands and thousands of yakshas in revenge, so much so that Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather, asked him to stop, and he said, Kuvera won't be pleased with you, and then our whole family will be in difficulty. And after all, very, very interesting what happens. He said, after all, you're killing so many yakshas because of one person being killed. But who actually killed him? Nothing can happen without the desire of the Lord. Dhruva had already killed so many. So please stop. Please stop. Nothing can happen without the desire of the Lord. Why are you entangling yourself in this way? Accept it. And Dhruva Maharaj stopped. And then Kuvera, who is the progenitor of the yakshas, came. And what did he say? You have killed so many yakshas. No. He said, nothing can happen without the desire of the Lord. So you haven't killed anyone. Swayambhuva Manu said, they did not kill your brother, Uttama. Ultimately, it was Krishna. Kuvera very liberally said, you did not kill all these yakshas. Ultimately, it was the Lord. Very powerful preaching, actually. And then, Dhruva goes back and it describes how he renounced his kingdom after ruling for so many thousands and thousands of years, and he was ready to return back to Godhead, and an aeroplane came to take him to Vaikuntha. And what did he step upon to board that aeroplane?
Death.
How wonderful. Everyone fears death, but for an actual devotee, death is a stepping stone to go to the spiritual world. So what is there to fear? And as the pastime ends, Dhruva Maharaj is in his aeroplane going to the spiritual world, going ever upward, and he thought that he couldn't go alone because his mother had helped him, given him that instruction. She was his Vatma Pradaksha Guru. She had given him the instruction to go to the forest, given him that direction to find the Lord, saying that the Lord would satisfy. He could satisfy his desire. And then he looked behind and he saw that his mother was also going to the spiritual world. And Prabhupada's purport to that verse, I may not be able to find it immediately, but is very, very humbly. He states that sometimes he thinks in that way too, that by the grace of his advanced disciples, that they will carry him back to Godhead. Very humbly speaking in that way. Now, there are three verses described at the end of the chapters on Dhruva Maharaj. The glories of this pastime were described, and then on the sheets that we have, 4:12:40, there is the following verse. After observing the glories of Dhruva Maharaj, the great sage Narada, playing his veena, went to the sacrificial arena of the Pratetas and very happily chanted the following three verses. Narada was his spiritual master, and he glorified three verses in the assembly of the Pratetas. In three verses, he glorified Dhruva Maharaj in the assembly of the Pratetas. First verse. Narada said, the great sage Narada said, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantist or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Due to his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity. Second verse. Just see how Dhruva Maharaj, aggrieved at the harsh words of his stepmother, went to the forest at the age of only 5 years, and under my direction, Narada said, underwent austerity. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unconquerable, Dhruva Maharaj defeated him with the specific qualifications possessed by the Lord's devotees. We'll read Prabhupada's purport here. Well, from it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is unconquerable. What is his name that means unconquerable?
Ajita.
No one can conquer the Lord. But he voluntarily accepts subordination to the devotional qualities of his devotees. For example, Lord Krishna accepted subordination to the control of Mother Yasoda because she was a great devotee. The Lord likes to be under the control of his devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that everyone comes before the Lord and offers him exalted prayers. But the Lord does not feel as pleased when offered such prayers as he does when a devotee, out of pure love, chastises him as a subordinate. This is the God we are worshipping. Bhaktivatsalya. The Lord forgets his exalted position and willingly submits to his pure devotee. Dhruva Maharaj conquered the Supreme Lord because at a very tender age, only 5 years old, he underwent all the austerities of devotional service. This devotional service was of course executed under the direction of a great sage, Narada. This is the first principle of devotional service. Adau Guru Asrayam. In the beginning, one must accept a bona fide spiritual master. And if a devotee follows strictly the directions of the spiritual master, as Dhruva Maharaj followed the instructions of Narada Muni, then it is not difficult for him to achieve the favor of the Lord. The sum total of devotional qualities is development of unalloyed love for Krishna. This unalloyed love for Krishna can be achieved simply by hearing about Krishna. Lord Chaitanya accepted this principle that if one in any position submissively hears the transcendental message spoken by Krishna or about Krishna, then gradually he develops the quality of unalloyed love. And by that love only, he can conquer the unconquerable. The Mayavadi philosophers aspire to become one with the Supreme Lord, but a devotee surpasses that position. Not only does a devotee become one in quality with the Supreme Lord, but he sometimes becomes the father, mother, or master of the Lord. Arjuna also, by his devotional service, made Lord Krishna his chariot driver. He ordered the Lord, "Put my chariot here," and the Lord executed his order. These are some examples of how a devotee can acquire the exalted position of conquering the unconquerable. Now the third verse. And this is the one I'd like to speak very, very briefly about. Dhruva Maharaj attained an exalted position at the age of only 5 or 6 years, after undergoing austerity for 6 months. Alas, a great Kshatriya cannot achieve such a position even after undergoing austerities for many years. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The great sage Narada Muni was very proud of having a devotee disciple like Dhruva Maharaj. He had many other disciples, but he was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, because in one lifetime, by dint of his severe penances and austerities, he had achieved Vaikuntha, which was never achieved by any other king's son or a Jarshi throughout the whole universe. The lesson from the life of Dhruva Maharaj is that if one likes, one can attain the Vaikuntha Loka in one life without waiting for many other lives. My Guru Maharaj, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, used to say that every one of his disciples could attain Vaikuntha Loka in this life without waiting for another life to execute devotional service. One simply has to become as serious and sincere as Dhruva Maharaj. Then it is quite possible to attain Vaikuntha Loka and go back home, back to Godhead in one life. I looked in my dictionary for the definition of those two words, serious and sincere. Serious, characterized by deep thought. Serious, grave or somber, as in character, disposition or mood. Serious, earnest, sincere, not trifling, not petty. Serious, requiring thought, concentration, or application. Serious, weighty, important, or significant. Serious, arising from deep concern or perplexity. And sincere, free of deceit, hypocrisy, or falseness. Sincere, genuine, real. Sincere, pure, unmixed. On another note, and again, I would just like to make a small point on this, that if we examine Dhruva Maharaj's life, we see that he approached the Lord with a motivation that was far from pure, that he wanted to become king, and in fact we could say that it was absurd, his desire for a five-year-old. It was a five-year-old's desire, a kingdom greater than anyone's, anyone who ever had a kingdom. It was a childish desire. It was materialistic. It was childish. And yet, he approached the Lord with that desire, with determination. And that is what is glorious. And he gave himself fully to fulfill that desire. He gave himself fully to find the Lord. And that was the simple point that I would like to make. That sometimes And of course it has to be under the guidance of a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master who will give proper guidance and instruction. But if we will just give everything to our desire to please the Lord, even though it may be childish in some ways, Krishna will see that. And I see this with some devotees. Not that I'm saying that their desire is childish, but they give everything. And someone may say, oh, his desire is impure and he has this problem and this problem and this problem. But from this pastime, what I see is that that doesn't make any difference. Yes, we should try to get rid of our impurities and our anartas, but ultimately that doesn't make any difference at all. If we just, with great determination, try to do something for the Lord's pleasure, try to find Him. We may have this impurity and that impurity, but let us try to give everything to find Him. That wonderful verse, and in some ways the fourth canto is a is almost a commentary on the verse from the second canto, Akama Sarva Kamava Moksha Kama Udaraditi Vraina Bhakti Yogenia Jaita Purusha Para. That whether we have, if we're full of material desires, have no material desires, or desire purely, we should perform devotional service. But Tivrena, with great power. And the example given is like the Ganges. Have any of you been to Gomukh and Gangotri? Yes. You see how the Ganges flows there? It is so powerful. Rushing. Even if a boulder is in its way, it will push it out of the side. So if we perform devotional service powerfully, that whatever impurities are there, even if we have material desires, even if this, even if that, if we become determined and focused in our devotional service, everything, Tivrena Bhakti Yogenia Jaita Purusha, everything will be washed away. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Yes. Actually, if I couldn't a planet but within the material world, it is a spiritual planet within the material world, and that is where Kiradakshai Vishnu resides. And when the universe is destroyed, that planet is not destroyed. So it's actually a Vaikuntha planet, a spiritual planet, although within the material world. Possibly you knew that already and it didn't satisfy you at all. But that's what I understand about it. Because Lord Vishnu doesn't bother doing the ruling. He has other things to do. About Prahlad Maharaj, in reading Prahlad Maharaj, what I noted was that why Prahlad Maharaj is so special in one sense is because he was a child, and just as a child could be walking across a busy intersection, but when he's holding the hand of his father, he feels no fear. So Prahlad Maharaj actually was in the most dangerous situation. His powerful, powerful father was trying to kill him continuously. But because he was holding the hand of Krishna, so to speak, and he was in a very, very, he was childlike in his dependence on Krishna, he had no anxiety whatsoever. That's my own realization on that point. Very, very simple, complete dependence on Krishna. But I'm a little afraid of something, and that's to take more questions right now, because I wanted to finish the lecture, that Prabhupada's lecture, and then there was one other thing I would like to do at the end, and it's already getting dark. So why don't we, could you get the computer working? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.